Read by David Wayman.
I don't usually give money to beggars. After all, they'll only spend it on drink. So I'm not really sure what got into my head that July morning. Maybe it was the sunshine. Maybe it was the girls in short dresses. Maybe there was just something in the air. Whatever it was, I went over to the old tramp outside the station and threw a couple of pounds into his bucket. Instead of thanking me, however, he stood up, reached behind my ear, and produced a single feather, as if by magic. Looking deep into my eyes, he pressed the feather into my hands, closing them over with his.
"You're a bird,"
he said to me. The voice was quiet, steady and educated, with no discernible accent.
"What we need on this job," he said, "is machines. Mechanical shovels. We'll have them out in 5 minutes with mechanical shovels."
"All right, then," Bean said, taking charge. "Boggis, you stay here and see the fox doesn't escape. Bunce and I will go and fetch our machinery. If he tries to get out, shoot him quick." The long, thin Bean walked away. The tiny Bunce trotted after him. The fat Boggis stayed where he was with his gun pointing at the foxhole.
Far from being discomforted by the morning's strange encounter, I felt elated for the rest of the day. A bird! Yes, that's what I was. I was an eagle soaring with wings outstretched above the mundane pettiness of everyday working life, just waiting for the moment to strike.
Two enormous caterpillar tractors with mechanical shovels on their front ends came clanking into the wood. Bean was driving one, Bunce the other. The machines were both black. They were murderous, brutal-looking monsters.
"Here we go, then," shouted Bean. "Death to the fox," shouted Bunce.
The machines went to work, biting huge mouthfuls of soil out of the hill. The big tree under which Mr. Fox had dug his hole in the first place was toppled like a matchstick. On all sides, rocks were sent flying and trees were falling and the noise was deafening. Down in the tunnel, the foxes crouched, listening to the terrible clanging and banging overhead.
"What's happening, Dad?" cried the small foxes. "What are they doing?"
Mr. Fox didn't know what was happening or what they were doing.
"It's an earthquake," cried Mrs. Fox. "Look," said one of the small foxes. "Our tunnel's got shorter. I can see daylight."
They all looked round. And yes, the mouth of the tunnel was only a few feet away from them now. And in the circle of daylight beyond, they could see the two huge black tractors almost on top of them.
"Tractors," shouted Mr. Fox. "And mechanical shovels. Dig for your lives. Dig, dig,
so,
dig."
What? I mean, how? It's not always easy to open the conversation with a beggar. But he understood what I was asking.
"You may not believe it looking at me now," he began. "But I went to university once. Studied zoology."
"Really?" I said.
"Yeah, but after I flunked out, the only job I could get was as a zookeeper."
"Well, at least you still managed to work with animals," I said, trying to sound positive.
"Have you ever considered how much shit they produce?"
"No," I replied truthfully. "Rather a lot, I imagine."
"Rather a lot," he said. "Rather a lot."
He was silent for a few seconds, before continuing.
"Anyway, it all finished after the accident."
"Accident?"
"Bleeding hippo fell on me. Damn nearly killed."
Antonio De Luca lay on the floor in the corner by the fridge freezer. At first glance, Vince thought he'd had his guts torn apart by what had happened. But closer inspection showed that a large open tin of diced plum tomatoes had fallen on him, followed by a string of mini sausages. Antonio called him over with the air of one who was in a bad play and about to use his last breath to reveal the murderer before croaking. Vince obliged by crunching his way across the floor to where he lay.
"What on earth has happened, Mr. De Luca?"
"It was the cockroach. A spray of the cockroach on the oven and then a boom. It has a crisis. The flame of the gas exploded the can."
Antonio pointed at the gas stove and then did an elaborate boom-type gesture with his hands, accidentally spraying Vince with plum tomato juice. Antonio then gestured to the area next to the stove, where a pile of paper napkins was happily burning. The can of insect spray was nowhere to be seen.
"Vincent, Quickly now! You must put out of the fire!
With all that was going on, Vince was amazed that despite the accident, Antonio was still keeping up the charade of his Italian accent.
No problem, Mr. De Luca. I'll do that now for you.
The fire was small, and as it was on a stainless steel surface, the threat was not immediate. However, to help calm down the pseudo-Italian in his tomato-y covering, Vince took the fire extinguisher from the floor, pulled the pin, and pointed the nozzle
Vince
in the direction of the
flames. Vince stood in the cold at the bus stop and looked at his watch. The bus was 5 minutes late. Minutes at a cold bus stop could be almost as long as minutes in the factory.
Where? I said. Oh, him! He was looking at a weedy-looking middle-aged man with thick glasses.
Yeah. Manatee. Don't see many of them in this part of town.
You sure?
Course I'm sure. Anyway, it's my round.
He waved his empty glass at me.
Thanks. I'll have, only as you are no doubt aware, I'm skint.
He was still waving the glass.
Another pint, I think.
I went off for the next round. He spent the next quarter of an hour identifying a bizarre array of animals who were apparently sharing the bar with us. Finally, I drained my glass and made to leave.
You're round, I think, he said.
Well, I was just leaving.
I'm not. And whilst you're at the bar, have another look at that dark one. Trust me, she's red hot.
But what's so special about her? I still like the look of that blonde.
Nah, she's a rabbit.
Sorry. Excuse me, but isn't that... He leaned in close and whispered in my ear.
The one in the middle is an octopus.
He tapped his nose in a meaningful manner, nodding slightly. Curiously, he turned out to be right about her. It was quite an exhausting weekend.
Having got himself at an angle which he decided was most appropriate, he knew it was time to throw caution to the wind and go for it.
Yeah, all right.
There was then a very long pause, which Vince considered filling with his own coy smile. He'd quickly realised that with his impetuousness and spontaneity, he'd not thought this through. It was normally good to have at least one topic of conversation before starting a conversation. You could get away without having a topic when you started a conversation with your mates, but this didn't work with a complete stranger.
"That'll use you were, mate," I said to him, brandishing my P-45.
"Didn't work out then, did it?"
he said, as if he'd been expecting this all along. "No, it bloody didn't," I said. He smiled and reached into his coat pocket. But I insisted that they were just what I was looking for, and eventually got my way. I arranged for my friend to get paid a grand in cash for his efforts, and he went on his way a happy man. I was happy too. I really felt that I'd learnt something important. 3 months later, the project and my immediate career were both in ruins. My fox had turned out to be a thief, and had succeeded in embezzling an impressive amount of the company's funds. My dog was indeed loyal to me, but then he was loyal to anyone and everyone who made the mistake of giving him the time of day. He was probably the neediest person that I have ever met, and he also turned out to have appalling
personal life. As I watched, the pigeon stopped eating and looked back at me. It cocked its head on one side and appeared to smile, as if to say, "Do I know you from somewhere?"